From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. About 15 years ago, Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. helped start the first white privilege conference to gather people from across the country to have a serious talk about race and diversity in the U.S. Since that first conference in Iowa, it has grown and attracts thousands of people in different cities each year. Moore spoke about diversity issues this fall with students at UW-La Crosse and Winona State University. He stopped by our studios, and I asked him to talk about the concept of white privilege.
The nuts and bolts of it is because of white skins, you get a perk, you get a bonus, you get a reward simply because you have white skin. I argue that America was colonized by white people for white people. The systems, organizations, institutions that they developed really were intended for white-skinned people.
And you gave the example earlier. You and I may both enter a bank. There is a chance that I may have an easier time getting a loan than you will because I have white skin.
That's a perfect example. When you walk into the bank, just because of white skin, you receive a perk, right? Just like if we walk on the car lot, as a man, I receive a bonus. So the other thing that's important about the White Privilege Conference is we don't just look at skin-based privilege. We work and challenge people to look at privilege comprehensively. The fact that we're on the radio talking and listening to each other, not worried about if it's going to be closed caption when it's played, right? That's a real privilege. Mm-hmm. So we look at ability privilege as well. And so we really work hard to cover privilege comprehensively. But the starting point is really race-based because the history of our nation is really built a lot on the foundation of whiteness. And the structures from banks to schools to universities, I mean, so on and so forth, was really built and benefited white males. And so it's important that as we expand into other kinds of privileges, that we understand the source. And so a lot of people, I mean, it's just amazing how people can't even get past the title. But those aren't the people that we're interested in having fights and battles with. We're really interested in having conversations with people who have done some diversity work and really ready beyond being a good person to look at closing gaps around economics, gaps around education, gaps around sexism, homophobia. Like, there are some real serious consequences and gaps that exist for people day to day, every day, around some of these identifiers that we've talked about. And that's what we're looking at the White Privilege Conference, is this concept of diversity, power, privilege, but also leadership. And so it's been really great to be at college campuses because, as I've said to college students, I mean, y'all in 25 years coming through this fine education like Gustavus and UWL and Winona State, I mean, in 25 years, when you make a phone call, people are going to return it. I mean, these educational institutions and going through this education give you opportunities, give you perks, give you privileges. And so having some understanding of that allows you, I think, to do and make better choices so that we live and are working towards a more equitable society.
And you probably can't understate the leadership aspect of it because I did attend the White Privilege Conference in Madison last year. As you said, it was the 15th one. There were a number of UW-La Crosse students that went too, and I met with a number of them afterwards just to have a conversation about people's takeaway from the event. And it does seem to empower these students. It really gets them thinking. It really gets their, you know, their brain spinning. You can just see the ideas and, in some cases, wanting to take action on certain instances on campus.
Yeah. And again, it's been interesting to watch some of the resistance to folks bringing college students to the conference because, you know, people spend so much money to do some of the strangest things for their kids, you know, and stretch them and challenge them, whether it's, you know, football camps. I've seen places where people are spending hundreds of dollars to send their kids to football camp or basketball camp. And again, I'm not opposed to any of that because I think it helps to have folks with expertise work with your kids and help them grow and expand and all of that. But when it comes to diversity issues, it's like you expend a little money. And white privileges are relatively affordable conference, we're not charging exorbitant amounts of money trying to get rich and get paid and all that stuff. We're really just trying to create a learning environment where kids, young people especially, future leaders, are being challenged around issues of diversity at the highest level. And I just wish folks would stop hating on the conference, so to speak, and attacking and degrading, demeaning, and organizations and institutions that support, like UWL Students to Go, and really do as you've done. Talk to the students, like, see what their experience is like, hear what it is they've been challenged by and what it is they're hearing, and see if it's helping them or allowing them to do anything differently around critical thinking, which I would hope is why their parents are sending them to college, is why they're sending them away from home after high school. Like, this is what you want the institutions that you leave them in to do for them, is to bring them home smarter, bring them home thinking more critically, bring them home thinking wider and broader. And so that's what we're really excited about and really happy about with the conference. It's no matter what resistance is saying, when folks like yourself show up and say to a student, what the heck did you get out of this conference? They're having some really positive things to say.
I'm interested in your thoughts on the pushback because, you know, there are few people out there who said, you know, university money, city money shouldn't be going to a conference like that. But also it seems that there are some people that don't understand the concept of white privilege, which is fine. I mean, everyone's constantly learning, and I'm sure the definition's always changing in everyone's mind. But, I mean, do you have a want to reach out to those people and try to get through to them and understand where you're coming from?
Yeah, you know, I think I spent a good part of my early years in my career, particularly around consulting, dealing with folks in resistance mode. And what I've learned, especially dealing with family, I mean, some of the greatest resistance I receive is from the people I love the most. That's a whole nother show we'll have to do at another time. But seriously, I think the thing I've learned is there are some pancakes you'll never flip over. And so I'm not really making myself, working myself up, getting myself in an unhealthy state of mind, unhealthy state of being anymore all the time. It's not that I'm not willing to engage folks, but I'd rather spend my time with a young person who's really interested in learning and growing and really assisting them in that way. It's not like I'm not up for a good fight every now and then, but I'm really seriously having to think about the amount of energy and how unhealthy, high blood pressure, all that stuff that goes into having these kinds of arguments and combative kinds of engagements with folks when they're not really interested in learning. They're not really interested in listening. You know, they just want to be in combat. I feel like we're almost conditioning our kids to think that it's better to be combative than it is to be cooperative. And so that's not the model I want to show and not the way I want to spend my time and energy. So I'm not unwilling to take on a challenge about the conference. If they're saying, hey, you're wasting taxpayers' money, I'm saying, well, help us understand how you feel, why you feel that way. Here's what the young people, what the university, what the city government's getting out of this conference, right? I mean, the price of the hotels are the lowest price ever in national, international conference history in many cases. The registration is very, very reasonable. So what are some other things that possibly folks are expending resources on? And are you looking comprehensively? Why is it just the conference you're looking at? Because people do conferences all the time at the higher ed level. And so I don't know if it's really about the expenditure than it is about some of what you said. People just disagree with the subject matter.
When you read about, you know, the concept of white privilege, and this isn't always just with your conference, but there's some people who think that it's an anti-white movement.
Yeah, I tell you, some people, if they don't meet me, they think I'm the grand poobah of the Ku Klux Klan. You know, like, it's really a shock to people to see, oh, my goodness, you're the guy who started the White Privilege Conference, right? So, yeah, they think that in addition to being an attacking, degrading, beating up on white people kind of initiative, it also may be a white power initiative. So there are a lot of mixed messages out there. That's why it helps when folks like yourself come. Right? And we want people to come experience the conference. Now, if you're coming to experience, to learn and engage, we're open for that. But if you're just coming to be, you know, trying to expose or paint the cops in a way that it's not. That, I mean, it's just not healthy for us and for the people that we're working with, because that's not the real intention of what we're trying to do. And I'm not spending my energy on those folks anymore, because what I've learned is there are more good people, particularly across the Midwest, who are really willing and ready, especially young people. I mean, they want high level of engagement around this subject matter, just like they do in athletics and music and theater. They want to be pushed, just like they do in calculus and social studies and other kinds of subject matter in the classroom. They want to be pushed. The same is true around the issue of diversity.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. He's executive director of the Privilege Institute, and he's also founder and the program director of the White Privilege Conference, and was recently in La Crosse and Winona to talk about diversity issues. A big part of your mission is educating students and children just about issues of diversity and whatnot. And, you know, I think about my own schooling growing up. Teachers teach you that it's probably in your best interest to accept all people, of regardless of your religion, the color of your skin, your nationality, and that hate is bad. Are schools doing enough to talk about diversity and, you know, anti-prejudice issues? Of course, it shouldn't all fall on the schools. It should be parents, too. You know, and issues of privilege. Are issues of privilege being taught in the school? And is it ever, like, an appropriate age to start really thinking about white privilege?
Yeah. I think schools personally can do more. I think partly because my experience in education all this time says that people have been doing stuff. It's not like we have bad teachers with bad hearts and bad intentions in schools. I mean, actually, we have the opposite of that. But many of them don't have the skills, haven't had the training to really deal with these issues. So they've approached it in the way you just talked about. They say, I'm a good person. You should be a good person. So let's hold hands and sing Kumbaya. I mean, that's great. But when you're dealing with a society that was, you know, shaped and framed around issues of sexism, homophobia, racism, that doesn't always interrupt those cycles. So that's why you need skills and understanding, not only so that you can be a good person, but that you can battle and challenge some of these cycles of behaviors and decisions and results that have been going on for hundreds of years in this great nation. And so I feel like working more with teachers in their pre-teacher areas is something that we're seeing more and more of. I think also now schools bring me in to actually work with teachers on site, and teachers are willing to learn about new books that they can read and new strategies that they can try, because what we're also seeing is the student population is changing. I mean, not only is it this issue of diversity, I mean, just the kids that they're going to be dealing with, the 21st century is changing. And so it's a great time, I think, educationally to be looking at and rebooting and reconsidering a lot, in addition to diversity, also just the way we work with multiracial kids, kids who come from adopted home, kids come from single parents, because a lot of times we just dump them all in there and say, hey, they all will learn 1 + 1 = 2, you know? And what we know now is kids learn differently in what their home situation. And so I think it's an exciting time in education. Now, this white privilege thing, when did you start? I think for me, with my son, I mean, I'm not saying white privilege right now as a kid of color, but I am teaching him how he's really fortunate and blessed. There are a lot of things that he gets to do that other people don't get to do, from the food he eats, from the toys he has. So really helping him to understand empathy and possessions and taking care of things and giving back and not just, you know, assuming that this comes easy. So it's a early start into the conversations about privilege, if you ask me, that I think can be offered to young people at a really young age, because we know this, they're resilient, they're really smart. I mean, often kids are dumbed down because parents and adults aren't ready for the conversation. They are ready. So it's really for us in our home, our skills sharpening and growing so that we can give it to him appropriately, but he's ready for the information.
So when you talk with your son, or when you're talking about this with anyone else, how is someone supposed to appropriately use their privilege? I know that's a huge question, but whether it's white privilege, male privilege, able-bodied privilege, what does one do with it, especially in a society where there is so much non-privilege?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just a simple example back to if we go to the car lot, you and I step on the lot, and if we're there together as a couple, the guy or the person who's selling the salesperson says to me, "Hi, how can I help you, Mr. Moore?" Right? Like, totally doesn't even see you there. I can check that up, right? That's a small thing where I can say, whoa, wait a minute. I'm actually here without all the expertise. Ms. Moore is actually the one who knows cars, right? So I can interrupt that. And again, that's just a kind of male-female car lot situation. But I think there are many times where I can take the privilege of being seen as a male and interrupt, whether it's watching a commercial, whether it's catcalling on campus, right? There are some ways that I can seriously step in. Sometimes people are talking about, "I don't really know what to do," and actually it's pretty doggone simple, right? Sometimes it's just the little things that you can do around privilege, whether it's, you know, someone just slamming on the accessible button to go into the door when they don't need the accessible button, right? Why are you using it and possibly, you know, causing it to be not ready or not functioning for someone who really uses it? So that's something I can do with my able body privilege, you know, or watching closed captions is another thing. Right? Just being sensitive that there could be someone that can't always hear the TV, that kind of thing. So there are little things, I think, that I argue, that I push, that I challenge people to think about and not think about, well, how can I make sure every kid graduates at the same level? You know, it may not be an opportunity to be using your privilege in that way to change something that big, but it may be the opportunity to say to a colleague, "Man, this kid is really smart in your class. I think maybe if you try allowing the kid to use spoken word in their homework, might allow them, allow you to make a different kind of connection."
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guest today is Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. He's Executive Director of the Privilege Institute, and he's also the founder and program director of the White Privilege Conference and was recently in La Crosse and Winona. You mentioned before we started the interview that when you think about elections and you think about politics, one of the big things you think about and that you really talk to people about is voter turnout, and how that's one of the biggest issues, obviously.
Yeah. I think, again, it feels like sometimes young people especially are feeling like this really doesn't matter. But also that it seems like that most of the people who are running for the offices are always in conflict, always in battle. It's like you're voting for the greatest gladiator. It's just not, I don't think, a real attractive option. So I think I have some concerns about that. But also we're seeing what feels like some barriers to voting being passed in some places where you now have to produce an ID, so to speak. And again, I don't know. I go back and forth about that because I can understand that you don't want people voting twice, all that kind of stuff. But I can see how that can be a shield to some people feeling comfortable coming out and all that. So those are the kind of concerns I have. Young people, especially around what's really this pick the best gladiator kind of. I mean, you watch the commercial, it's just like, who can, oh, I mean, it's like, oh, I mean, why would I go out and participating in this? And then also, when I want to go out, it's like I got to have, you know, all these forms or whatever. It's like more of a hurdle for me to participate in the process than it is to just stay home and not have to deal with all of that.
We have another more year of President Obama's year as, or 8 years as first African-American president. You know, when you reflect on these 8 years, what do you think? Has anything changed for the African-American community? You know, whether it's maybe inspiring young men and women to get involved in politics or whether it's actually improved racial conversations anywhere. Right. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, that's a great question. I usually say this, that it's important for us to recognize the president's mom because he recognizes his mom. So we should say he's a biracial president.
Biracial president,
right?
Yep.
But we do know that, you know, that whole thing about when he gets pulled over, how he identifies, all that kind of stuff, which could be black man. So I think it's important just to mention that first. Mm-hmm. You know, I've loved these 7 years. I'm going to miss the president. And I think the one thing that the nation has missed out on, the greatest benefit of President Obama's tenures, is the visible presence of a black man in the White House, of a black family in the White House. That what that does for me psychologically is just medication. Sometimes I'll just watch the president on TV, won't even listen, and just like say to myself, damn, I'm in the White House. I just think psychologically the message that sends to my son now, where years and years of my life, I never thought that was even possible. And who knows whether it'll happen again, but I can never say to my son, we've never had a black man in the White House. This is not possible. And I can't walk into the streets of Chicago, St. Louis, and say to a group of black men, wherever they are, and say, bruh, you can be president someday. Right? I think we're missing that opportunity to really challenge young black males in that way, to say this is the excellence that you have the potential to be. And so that's what I'm going to miss most for me, is seeing myself walk out on the lawn, get on that helicopter, get in Air Force One, address the United Nations, right? Speak the State of the Union address, right? Like on the talk show circuit, man, it just felt so good to see me in that position psychologically. And I hope in this last year, in addition to some of the things that he has to do that's related to the work, that people not forget about the psychological impact and challenge our kids, support our kids more and more to understand this is who you are. This is what you have the potential to be.
Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. is Executive Director of the Privilege Institute and the founder of the White Privilege Conference, a national annual event that deals with issues like diversity and leadership. He was in the area this fall speaking with students at UW-La Crosse and Winona State University. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.